Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
One of the issues with our team right now is mental toughness, discipline, and execution.
Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples, wishing you all a happy Advent, a pensive Advent, or at least all of you who celebrate such things. This episode being released, of course, on the final day of Advent. And a happy holidays to all of you who celebrate other holidays and such, or just take a break or continue to work through this festive season. Have a lot to discuss with lots of stuff having happened in the Florida State universe over the past week or so, including the hiring, finally, of Kendall Briles. We've already discussed that a good bit on this podcast, knowing that it was coming. We still expect Randy Clements, the offensive line coach, with Briles to join him on staff before too long. Still not sure exactly how that's going to work out in terms of staff changes and the status of Greg Fry and all of this other stuff. Obviously, Fry, a good offensive line coach and an alum in his own right. So not exactly sure how that's going to be handled. But in any case, Florida State has hired Kendall Briles. Also have some potential transfers to discuss and some analysis of the early signing day, which obviously came with some disappointments. And there's plenty to look forward to in terms of some guys that chose not to sign during the early signing period. So plenty to discuss there, and then a couple questions to be answered at the end of the show. So lots to get through today. But before I do that, let's go ahead and thank the sponsors of the show. First of all, Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida, this being his second year as a sponsor of this podcast. Super helpful, very supportive of this podcast. And if you need any real estate transactions to be made in the greater Jacksonville area or really anywhere in Florida, give Lewis a call. And if he can't do it, he'll make sure that you have the best person to do it. And if you're in that greater Jacksonville area, there's nobody better. So work with him, let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered Podcast, and help us out a good bit as well. And also Garage Makeovers, the number one rated garage makeover company in Palm Beach and Broward counties for over a decade. If you need anything done in your garage, give Nathan a call. Let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered Podcast, and he'll give you a special deal. I'm not exactly sure. I need to check with him what exactly that is, but yeah, he'll take care of you just a little bit more. All right, let's get to it. So first of all, Kendall Briles. Yeah, we already talked a little bit about this in the last podcast and even the podcast prior. This has not been exactly a secret that Florida State would be bringing in Kendall Briles. I mean, I think I tweeted that he and Clements were going to be coming something like 10 days ago or maybe even longer than that. I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was quite a while ago. It's been a long time coming. And one of the reasons it took so long was that initially Florida State believed that the old buyout was still in force for Briles, and that they could get him for cheaper without having to pay the increased buyout on his new contract. But that turned out to be a point of dispute between Florida State and Houston, so that took some time to work out. There's still a few T's to be crossed and I's to be dotted there. But also Briles wanted to finish out the season coaching his alma mater, and Florida State honored that as well. So, when you put all that together, it took a little while, and actually being released with this news being released over the holiday, ultimately, or immediately before the holiday, on the weekend before the holiday, ultimately that helps minimize, at least on the front end, the PR hit that they're going to take for this, which there is going to be a significant PR hit, and it's going to be a PR hit that's not going to just be a one-time thing. When you bring in someone whose last name is Briles, it's going to come with a cost. And this tells you, to some degree, where Florida State is right now in terms of how they're thinking about this. Because if Florida State was very comfortable right now, if Willie Taggart believed that everything was completely secure and that everything was humming as it should be, then my guess is you probably don't make this hire just because of the political cost, because of the PR hit that comes when you hire someone with the last name Briles due to the, frankly, awful situation at Baylor. And the not just the number of alleged sexual assaults and misdeeds from those Baylor teams, but essentially the way that coaching staff and the athletic department and the Baylor administration in general did their best to sweep all that under the rug and keep it covered as long as football was winning, which understandably the Briles name is tainted because of that. And regardless of how much Kendall himself had to do with that, I mean, he was not the head coach and all that. His father was the head coach and the culture was what it was. So his name is always going to be associated with that. And bringing him in does involve some degree of risk with that. If the first time that something happens involving a sexual assault, God forbid, or any sort of negative situation involving a woman at Florida State, I can bet you that Kendall Briles and that connection is going to be brought up, and there's going to be a ton more said about that. And Florida State will continue to be portrayed as a place where it is a win at all costs environment with no concern for any amount of ethics or good treatment of women, anything like that, because of this hire. So you make this hire knowing that you've got some off-field costs, and you make this hire believing that the on-the-field benefits of one of the best offensive minds, one of the best offensive coordinators in the game is worth that. You make this hire believing that Kendall Briles can fix what was wrong on the offensive side of the football last year, that he can come in and immediately turn it around. And Briles has never coordinated an offense that has averaged fewer than 34 points a game, for what it's worth. So there's good reason to think that if you're prioritizing the on-field stuff, it probably is worth it. Now, there's a lot of interesting stuff to think about here in terms of not just the optics, but the rightness, the morality of this kind of hire. And I know that there's a lot of Florida State people who are not going to be especially excited about about this hire and are going to be embarrassed by this hire. And I've thought about this a lot because I really believe that it's important not just to win at all costs. I believe that it's important to do things the right way as much as that's possible in something like college football, where, you know, the old saying is, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. I mean, leaving that side of things off entirely, when we're talking about the morality of rape culture and all of these other things that the Baylor situation represents, I mean, this is a difficult thing. And the question is, if someone was involved there, if someone was a part of that program, what should anybody ever hire somebody who is in that program again? And this is a much harder question than a lot of people, I think, seem to appreciate, because the immediate sort of popular way of thinking about this, the knee-jerk social media type way of thinking about any of this stuff these days, is that if somebody says something that is objectionable, that is wrong, even immoral, or does something or is involved with something that is horrible, then that person not only should lose his or her job, but should basically never be hired by anybody ever again. And that's a really dangerous place to be. That's a really dangerous place to live. I mean, that's the kind of environment that people lived in the USSR. Actually, Megan McArdle has a really interesting article on this from about, I don't know, 8 months ago or so, where she talks about how modern social media culture, where everybody basically where it's possible that you say something that all of a sudden goes viral, and then you basically are blacklisted. That this becomes something that this is akin to the kind of living in fear, the culture of fear that people lived in the USSR, where it wasn't necessarily just going into a work camp or some sort of death camp that you were worried about. It was that if you said something that went against what the party commissar wanted, then you would lose your ability to earn a living. You would lose your livelihood. And then effectively you might as well have been dead, and your family couldn't survive either. And I go into that. That sounds extreme, but I go into that basically to say that, you know, it's a hard thing when someone's involved in something that's really heinous, that's really awful, and then they're not, you know, they're not put behind bars. Or even if they are, let's say someone has quote unquote paid their debt to society. Do you hire this person for something once they get out? Or do you say, oh, you made this mistake, or you were part of this in the past, and now you're blacklisted, you're burned, you can't work anymore. Or if you're going to work, you need to work, you know, you need to be flipping burgers. Should we have like a caste system where someone who does something or is involved in something, even if they don't do it, is involved, you know, perhaps guilt by association? Although, again, I have a hard time believing that when Kendall Briles was at Baylor, that he didn't have some idea of what was going on. That beggars belief to me. There's no doubt that when you are on a coaching staff like that and there are problems that come up, you have some idea of what's going on. So let's be honest about that. Now, you know, as to his active role and all that, I don't know. And I don't know that any of us can know, because of the way that stuff's sealed by a private school that has its own vested interest to protect. But my thing is, okay, let's presume that he does know what's going on. Even that there's some degree of trying to keep things quiet. Yeah, that's filthy. Yeah, that's immoral. But the question is, okay, once through that, does that mean that the guy should never work again? Now, some may say he should never work in football again. And I think that you can make a case for that. But then where should he work? Is it okay for him to work on Wall Street? Is it okay for him to go back to school and become a medical doctor? I mean, where are the boundaries? And that's a really hard thing. And I know this is getting pretty far afield from football, but it's worth asking at this point, partly because I think when you make this kind of hire, you have to understand that, yeah, if anything, even close to what you saw before at Baylor, Even if a sniff of that happens at Florida State, then you have to eliminate that. But if you're hiring for an offensive coordinator, and you know he's not been ruled out by the rules, and he's not been convicted of anything, at that point you make the hire for football. And that's the thing I keep coming back to on this. If I'm in Willie Taggart's shoes, do I hire Kendall Briles? And the more I've thought about it, the more I think, yeah, probably. Because ultimately, I keep coming back to this, the incentives, what I'm hired to do as a football coach is not to be somebody's father, even though I want to be the best father figure and the best example that I can be. I'm not hired to be a university professor, even though sometimes football coaches teach a class. I'm not hired to do any of that. I'm hired to win football games. That's what the incentives are there for. If I don't do that, I'm going to get fired. That's the thing that I have to do. And the same is true for the offensive coordinator. Same is true for every coach. You are hired to win football games. That's it. And so ultimately, if I'm hiring, I'm making a hire to get the guy who is going to win the most football games. Now, if there's some sort of questionable ethics that lie in this person's path, or I'm worried about that, then yeah, you know what? I don't want to hire somebody who I don't believe in their vision. I don't want to hire somebody who's going to break the rules and, you know, end up putting Florida State where Ole Miss is. You know, I don't want that. But outside of that, you're hired to win football games. And thinking about this in terms of the Baylor situation, the biggest problem at Baylor, yes, the Briles situation, you know, Art Briles and the way that he handled all that was bad. But you know where the biggest problem was the overall institution, the system that was set up at Baylor to basically keep all that stuff on the down low, to keep all that stuff hidden, to sweep it under the rug. That doesn't happen without systemic cultural stuff through the entire organization. And that starts at the Baylor University level, and that continues through the Baylor Athletic Department and so on. And if the football program is able to do that sort of thing on its own, then that means that there is a systemic problem within the organization itself. Because what you can't do, and this is, you know, basic economics, this is the way things work, what you can't do is you can't hire someone to win football games and then expect that person to also do things they're not incentivized to do. That's just the way things work. So to me, what you have to do if you're hiring is you make sure you hire the best people you can to win games, and then you make sure that there is sufficient institutional oversight within the organization to make sure that all these other things are taken care of. It's when you put it all under one roof, that things are going to be that the temptation to and the capacity to bend the rules and cut corners and all that's going to happen, because ultimately help you win games, well, that's what you're there to do. So then that becomes the operating imperative. So to me, what matters is that Florida State has institutional things in play to make sure that the coaching staff can't just say, well, we want Josh Ball. We want the guy that's done this. No, you can't have him, because institutionally, that's not how we work. No, if this guy has been accused of this, this has to go to this person and work its way up the chain. You can't keep that in-house. There has to be that kind of operational oversight. And if that's in place, then yeah, you can hire a Kendall Briles, and I think you can do it with largely a clean conscience. But you have to have those other administrative systems in play. And that's true whether you're hiring a Kendall Briles or not. So I know that's somewhat lengthy, but I think it's worth bringing into play right up front. Now, as for a football hire, Briles is probably the perfect hire, as close to perfect as you can get for Willie Taggart. Because Taggart, in terms of developing his Gulf Coast offense, one of the first places he went to work on that and to learn that was out to Baylor with Art Briles and Kendall Briles. That's where he learned a lot of this stuff. And ultimately, as I've seen it, looking through the coach's film and all this, Taggart's version is not as good as the Baylor version. It's not as robust. It's there's certain parts of it. Taggart actually has vestiges of all sorts of other things that he's added and tagged and put in there because it's coming from some of his older stuff. The Briles system is really tight. I mean, they do what they do and it all works together, and they don't have a whole lot else that they are pulling in from elsewhere. It's not, you know, when Taggart's putting this together, he's taking a lot from his background with Harbaugh. He's taking a lot from interactions and visits with Clemson and with Auburn and Gus Malzahn, and then with the Briles and all this. Well, now I think next year, yeah, they'll still quote unquote be running the Gulf Coast offense, but it's going to be Kendall Briles offense. And it's going to be stripped down even more of some of the things that have been pulled in from elsewhere. And it's going to be really unified. And that's certainly why Briles likes to bring Clements with him when he goes somewhere. Those guys have been a package for a long time. And it's because the veer and shoot, which is really what the Briles system is. Yeah, there's a lot of specific passing stuff and the way that they teach certain passing stuff that's important. But it starts up front as much as anything. And it's a very veer influenced, a lot of gap blocking, a lot of power, which is misnamed to some degree, but a lot of veer, you know, dive option type stuff, and a lot of power, a lot of counter. And one of the things that they do differently is because of how wide they split everything, they emphasize getting vertical displacement. They want to move people, and they want to move them back up front. They're going to emphasize big offensive linemen and recruit on the extremes. They want the fastest possible receivers and the biggest possible linemen so that they can either mash you up front or run by you outside, and they're going to force you to have to choose which one you want to defend more, which one you're worried about more. And that's what they're going to do. And Florida State has a lot of the personnel that's going to work for that kind of system, if they can get a couple things fixed up front, if they can get, you know, things where they want to at quarterback. But that's why it matters that he wants to bring that extra help in terms of off the field assistance and also Clements, because he wants guys that know not just how to install the plays, but how to run and teach this specific integrated system. And the Bryles have been really sort of secretive about how they do that. I can tell you this, I'm going to be at the Florida State Clinic, if at all possible, this year to learn as much as I can, not just not so much to cover stuff, but because I want to know as a coach, I want to be able to learn that and see it up close as a coach. I'm excited to be able to learn some of that stuff. And not just because I can do the X's and O's part of it, but a lot of the teaching part of it is the more difficult thing. And again, the Bryles have figured out how to do it. So it's a really good fit. Now, as far as passing game, I called it the veer and shoot because it's a lot of run and shoot type concepts, a ton of route adjustments for wide receivers. They may only call four routes an entire game, but each route is going to have reads built in so that if they're here, you do this. If they're here, you do this. If they're here, you do this. And it makes it really difficult on the defense, because even the passing game is effectively option stuff. Now, you know, for folks who hated the Jimbo Fisher system on that, Fisher's system had a lot of route adjustments as well, but there's a lot of them built into the Bryles system. Again, pulling out of the old run and shoot type school. I'll be spending a lot of time this offseason breaking stuff down on that. I'm working on getting good film to use to break this stuff down over the course of the summer. In any case, next thing we need to talk about is the quarterback situation. And that's because the early signing period ended up with Sam Howell doing as kind of expected. I mean, this is something that on this podcast, I'd expressed some concern that Howell from my UNC side, from the UNC side of things, I was hearing that Howell was, that UNC felt really good about him and that Howell was probably going to end up at UNC. Regardless of, he knew, Howell had been told a week in advance or a little over that Kendall Bryles was going to be the coordinator at Florida State. But ultimately, he was more confident in the in-state school. It's home for him. That's a school he grew up being a fan of. And he felt like the stability under Mac Brown, who's going to be there for a little while with this being a first-year hire and him being the new head coach's guy, and with the Phil Longo hire there at offensive coordinator, he just felt like that was a better place to be. And given that Walt Bell was his one contact at Florida State, Walt Bell was the reason he committed to Florida State. He was the first guy to offer him when Bell was at Maryland. And, you know, the Howell family trusted Walt Bell. And when things did not go well for Bell at Florida State, that kind of meant that the Howells lost their interest. They lost the hook. And Florida State did the best that they could to try to recover that. But there's only so much you can do when the one guy that your recruit trusts and your recruit's family trusts not only leaves, but leaves kind of acrimoniously. Feeling like he didn't really get the best shake, and feeling like you know, the fit wasn't real good and that things were chaotic and disorganized at Florida State. And then when the Howells, of course, ask him, they've got a 4-year relationship with this guy, and they say, hey, so, you know, what do you think about Florida State? Should we stay there? What do you think he's going to say? If he's going to be honest, if that's what he believes. No, he's probably going to say, listen, you know, you committed to the institution, not to me. And, you know, he's going to probably do all that. But what he's certainly going to say is stuff like, well, you know, I didn't have the best experience there. I didn't feel like things were well run or organized. And, you know, I would think carefully about where you want to be. And ultimately, that's not going to go very well for being able to keep that guy. So you combine that with a strong in-state school, with a recent hire that Howell's dad really respects. And that's that. But that's a really big deal, because ultimately that leaves you with one quarterback on your roster, one scholarship quarterback on your roster going into the spring. And yes, I know DeAndre Francois is technically on the roster right now, and he's tweeting that it's fake news that he's leaving and everything, but I'm going to trust my source on this. And ultimately, it's not just DeAndre Francois' decision as to whether or not he's going to be back next year. And I don't expect to see him back next year. So, you know, if he wants to stay for the spring, I don't see it happening, but I don't expect to see him out there in the fall one way or another. And again, it's not a matter of necessarily his decision. He's had 4 years in the program and he's graduated and he's going to be moving on. So that leaves you with Blackman. And Blackman, listen, can run what Kendall Briles wants, especially with all the deep balls that Briles wants to throw. Blackman's touch and ability to throw down the field and push the ball down the field is a really good fit. But you still got to have more than one quarterback. That said, I've been told that Florida State's going to have a second scholarship quarterback on the roster for the spring. The name has been out there, but basically that it's going to happen. And that's Jordan Travis, the transfer from Louisville, a guy that Jimbo recruited for a little bit and that Bobby Petrino really liked, but then ultimately he didn't feel like he was treated very well when he actually got to Louisville and now is interested in Florida State. And it looks like he'll be at Florida State in the spring. Again, that's I'm not breaking any news in terms of mentioning his name, but I have been told that to expect him to be there in the spring. So that would be a second arm in the spring, and it's possible that they have even a third, another transfer in, and I'm not sure exactly whether that would be for the spring or not, and it's going to depend a little bit on some timing, but I think there's a very good chance. I'll just say this, an extremely good chance that Florida State gets either Justin Fields or Jalen Hurts, that one of those guys is on the roster in the fall. So I'm not real worried about the Florida State quarterback position moving forward because they've got some other names in the fold in terms of immediate transfers and some guys that can play right away. I mean, Hurts certainly can play right away. Fields almost certainly will be cleared because of his ability to claim a hardship waiver based on some of the things that were shouted from the stands at Georgia. There's no way the NCAA is going to want to turn that down. So he should be able to play right away as well. So they're probably going to have three arms right there. And then I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that's one transfer, probably another transfer. And I think they're going to try to land two high school quarterbacks in the cycle as well. But if they only land one, they land one. But there are still a few good options out there on the table. I was told that Florida State's going to have visits, or they already have visits lined up for 2 4-star recruits in January. Based on looking at the board, I think it's pretty obvious who those most likely are. One of them is certainly Lance, and I think it's Legendre, I think, but I hope he pronounces it. I would change it to Legendary, Legendre. But Lance Legendre from New Orleans, and John Reese Plumlee from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, who's a Georgia commit, but Georgia's trying to blue shirt him or you know, basically get him to delay entry, which means that, you know, he's not as high value for them. So, you know, both of those guys are good prospects. I think at this point, I like Legendre better than Plumlee. Certainly a little better size. I think he throws a little bit stronger ball. But overall, both of them good prospects. Neither quite as good a prospect as Howell. But again, Howell was never a Jameis Winston or a Justin Fields or an Elf. He was not one of those guys who was an automatic day one starter who could, you know, who is a generational guy. He was a good 4-star type quarterback with a high floor. One of those guys that you could count on to be a pretty good player down the line, but not, you know, an elite prospect. But neither of the other two that are on there are necessarily as good a prospect, certainly have lower floors than what he does. Neither throws it quite as well as he does. There's actually a third guy that I'm really interested in seeing what happens with, and that's Peyton Matocha or Matoka. I'm not exactly sure how that's said, but I'm guessing it's Matocha. He's a guy that Kendall Briles was recruiting to Houston. He's a Houston kid from a parochial school, St. Thomas, out there in Houston. 6'4", really good athlete. To my eye, has a pretty good motion, throws the ball pretty well down the field, and would fit the Briles offense really well. He might be the guy that I would most like to see Florida State get at this point. And I suspect with him being a three-star, and his film to me is four-star film, but with him being a three-star, I wonder whether or not they can get him to be a second quarterback in there with another four-star kid that he wants to come in and potentially compete. You know, he's a really good athlete though. And is, you know, he's a 6'9" high jumper. And again, at 6'4" has a lot of the type of size that you want to see there. Actually reminds me a lot of some of those Baylor, quarterbacks of the past. Probably most reminds me of Jarrett Stidham, who was at Baylor with the Briles, with Art and Kendall Briles before transferring to Auburn. But again, a lot of similarities to a guy like Jarrett Stidham, and a guy that Briles really liked at Houston, but wasn't going to be able to get to Houston because of some, basically the kid didn't like the school. But now with Briles at Florida State, I wouldn't be surprised if he brought Peyton Matocha with him as a quarterback recruit. And then of course there's also the Houston quarterback from this year who got hurt at the end of the year, but he's going to be a grad transfer as well. And you wonder whether he wants to come on board, though I'm not sure there's going to be playing time for him. So all this goes to say that I think the quarterback room at Florida State is going to be fine. There's no reason to really worry too much there. I think they're going to be able to find some quality arms. The Howell loss is a big one, but I think they're going to be able to fill that with, again, I think at the end of the day, they're going to get Jordan Travis on campus from what I'm told. And then one of Justin Fields or Jalen Hurts is very likely. And then you add, say, Matocha and Legendre, and all of a sudden you've got a full quarterback room again with some guys that can actually play. And that makes a big difference. And of course, you've still got James Blackmon there. And if you get a guy like, let's say, a Jalen Hurts there for a year, Blackman's probably the starter the next year, and your quarterback room is healthy. You've got depth. You've got to carry, in my view, you always have to carry four quarterbacks. As much as possible, you need to have four quarterbacks on your roster because of the way that they transfer, because of the way that guys get hurt. You have to have four competent quarterbacks on your roster. And that's where Florida State's been in real trouble lately. So that's a plus. That's I think, especially with Howell or with Briles coming on board, that neutralizes to some extent the impact of Howell decommitting and ultimately committing to North Carolina. Now, as for the remainder of early signing day, you know, the marquee signing that they got in a key position is, of course, Dante Lucas, a kid that has gotten his weight under control and, given that, has a chance to play early. Now, Florida State is better off on the interior. Lucas is definitely a guard. He's not a guy that's going to play tackle, but given that Florida State's a little bit healthier and in terms of roster on the interior, it may be a little harder for him to play right away, but he's a good enough player that he's going to compete and at least gives you some solid depth in there. And given how injury prone some of Florida State's best guards have been, maybe he is on the field by game two or three because somebody goes down yet again. But so that's a big one. But, you know, they whiffed, of course, on Putnam, their biggest offensive line, uncommitted offensive line prospect coming in. You know, Evan Neal, of course, went to Alabama as expected. So, you know, that was there were some misses there that would have helped, but not necessarily stuff that you expect Florida State to get on the heels of a 5-7 season. Now, they did get some quality players, though. You know, I like True Thompson a lot at the defensive tackle spot. I'm going to break some of these guys down a bit more on a later podcast, particularly as we get into the recruiting cycle that much more and approach the next signing day. And then I'll break down the entire class and where I think they fit over the course of the time immediately following the second signing day. The one thing that this class lacks, and again, those of you who followed this podcast for a long time know that I tend to break things down into specific categories. Impact players, guys who you can expect to make an early impact as a freshman or sophomore, somebody who has at least the possibility, the potential to be a player that could play early. Then your kind of high ceiling players, your future difference makers. These are guys that it's going to take a year or two, But once they get there, you're looking at potential all ACC or higher type players. And then you're looking at multi-year starters and then depth. And to me, this group had a lot of that potential starter situation, starter level guys, but not any impact players. I don't think there's really an impact player on this list. Lucas is probably the closest to that. And then there are a few that might tip into that potential difference maker, but I don't really see one of those either in this class. It's not, and again, I'm going to need to break down a little bit more of what they've got in terms of spending more time looking at some of their traits and breaking down some tape and all that. But I don't see a whole lot of that, but I do see a lot of guys that can reset the floor, you know, guys that are going to compete and can be solid players in the program for multiple years, and guys that by year two or three can be a starter and can be a starter that doesn't get you beat. I think that's really what you're looking at now. And there are a few high ceiling guys. You know, I think Derek McClendon is a guy that as he matures could potentially become a really good player. I think Renardo Green is a guy that has a chance to be a pretty good player on the outside. Jarvis Brownlee, a guy that has a chance to be a pretty good player on the outside, but these are not elite players. They didn't really land any of those. So at the end of the day, I think it was a decent early signing period, but not ultimately what you'd hope for in terms of turning the program around in that regard. Now, there are a couple guys that are potential difference makers among the list of guys that are committed but didn't sign. And I've been told not to worry about any of those guys, that those guys all are expected to sign. And there were, you know, reasons that they didn't sign that were not necessarily that they're looking around, but that those are guys that are going to sign with Florida State in the second signing day. And that's guys like Akeem Dent, who is an impact player. Nick Cross, potential difference maker. Brendan Gant, he's kind of on the edge. He's not an impact player though, at least not in my view. Travis Jay, another guy who, again, very good player, probably a potential difference maker. So, you know, you got some guys there that are really, really good prospects, but all of the best prospects did not sign early, basically, except for Lucas. So not ideal, but I think they've got a chance to close pretty well, get a couple quarterbacks on board, get the transfer situation set up so that you at least have some good depth. And again, Blackman is going to be able to compete to play in Briles' offense. So lots more to talk about, but I'll go ahead and rest it there so that all ye merry gentlemen and gentlewomen can have a good Christmas Eve and a Merry Christmas. I will be back after the holidays to talk a little bit more about some of the players that Florida State has signed and update on some scheme stuff and a few other things. So until then, have a Merry Christmas.
As always, I want to thank my sponsors, Louis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida, and Garage Makeovers, the top-rated garage remodeling company in South Florida. I also want to thank the supporters from Patreon who are above the Secure the Bag level. That would be Hector Cartagena, Dan Alvarez, Keith Cheney, Neil Cook, and Bert Bertoldi. Thank you all for your generosity. Definitely helps keep this going and helps make those film sessions possible. Many thanks to all of you. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.